listening to The Morning Magazine for Monday, September 27th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear from Saturday's Immigrants' Rights March calling for a pathway towards citizenship. Members of faith communities will gather this afternoon in downtown Boulder to rally for climate justice, and the CityCast Denver crew checks out a different way of feeding the hungry with a food bank that could pass for a grocery store. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC headlines, and then it's a public affair. And as always on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. But first, these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
On Saturday, protesters marched through downtown Denver streets in hopes of drawing attention to the issue of immigration into the U.S. and the humanitarian crisis at the border with Mexico. The marchers were also calling for a pathway to citizenship for Afghan refugees as well as undocumented immigrants. We'll have more on the march after headlines. Boulder County public health officials have said that they would stop requiring masks indoors if there were 21 consecutive days of low or moderate rates of COVID-19 transmission. But so far, those rates have been too high during September. The mask mandate was implemented in the county 3 weeks ago, but Angela Cimental of Boulder County Public Health told Denver 7 that the Delta variant has changed the whole landscape. Recent county data show there's was a 7-day cumulative incidence rate of 165 cases per 100,000, which is significantly over the low or moderate transmission rate. Cimental added that the rate is slowly going down, but the Delta variant is unpredictable. An investigation into alleged misconduct at the Colorado Air Pollution Control Division has concluded that violations were not intentional and officials did not falsify data. The Attorney General's office released a report after whistleblowers made various allegations. It shows that the director of the division, Gary Kaufman, had a potential conflict of interest in permitting a gold mine in Teller County, which his former law firm represented. The report finds that the conflict was resolved but not reported in violation of department policy. The Colorado Sun reports that three employees at the Air Pollution Control Division initially complained that department managers unlawfully approved permits for industry without requiring monitoring or modeling. They also complained to the EPA that their superiors ordered them to stop using modeling required by the Clean Air Act. The report says that there are multiple problems in how the division interprets EPA policy, but states that the instances cited by the whistleblowers do not appear to have resulted in pollution violations. With the goal of keeping people in their homes as they could face eviction, a group in Denver has submitted a petition that would allow voters to decide if tenants should have free legal services. Nine News reports that the group backing the effort is called Newer Denver, an acronym standing for No Evictions Without Representation, and it has collected more than 13,000 signatures. The measure, if approved by voters, would place a tax on landlords of $75 a year for each rental unit they own. The money would be used to fund free legal services for those facing legal action to remove them from their homes. A representative of the Colorado Landlords Association said that paying for the fees of tenants should not be the responsibility of property owners. However, Wren Echo, one of the proponents of the free legal services, said that they expect they are going to get a wide degree of support, with the only negative comments coming from landlords. A determination on whether they have received enough signatures to make next year's ballot could be made in the middle of next month. A person who was charged after the rioting on Boulder's University Hill in March pleaded guilty on Friday. Henry Chardak admitted he engaged in criminal mischief, a misdemeanor. Other more serious charges were dismissed, and he was sentenced to 1 year probation. The Daily Camera reports that Chardak was the first person to turn themselves in. As many as 800 college-aged people gathered at a large outdoor party that became destructive. A car was flipped, and other vehicles and property were damaged near 10th Street in Pennsylvania. The deputy district attorney who prosecuted the case said that the reason Chardak was offered a misdemeanor plea deal was because he quickly stepped up to the plate to take responsibility. At least 11 flyers that were disparaging toward the black community were left at downtown Longmont businesses last week. On Saturday, police said that they had spoken with a person involved in distributing the flyers, but added that no charges can be filed at this time. The contents of the flyers have not been made public, but one store owner told the Daily Camera that the flyers' contents were appalling and icky. The Boulder County District Attorney's Office said in a statement to 9 News that the First Amendment to the Constitution protects many forms of speech, regardless of how intolerant or disgusting it may be. And the person who posted the flyers did not trespass or damage property. The office said that the person violated human decency, but not criminal laws. Last year, sports betting was legalized in Colorado, and the state has brought in much more money than expected that it will use to fund water projects, among others. The Gazette reports that those projects will get almost $8 million from taxes on sports betting. A representative of the Colorado Water Conservation Board said that the money will be used on work for conservation protection and natural habitats and improvement of infrastructure, among other projects. Since sports betting was approved, bettors in Colorado have wagered over $3 billion. It will be mostly sunny today with the temperature in the high 80s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs about 10 degrees cooler in the upper 70s, and a 30% chance of showers afternoon tomorrow. Right now, it's about 55 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Hundreds of people marched in Denver Saturday in an action organized by the Colorado Immigrants' Rights Coalition. Demonstrators demanded that Democrats overrule the Senate parliamentarian and include a pathway to citizenship in the upcoming budget reconciliation bill. Jonathan Flowers reports from Denver.
Hundreds of people gathered in Viking Park Sunday to demand a pathway to citizenship and increased protections for the country's 11 million undocumented immigrants.
Just last week, the parliamentarian told us that citizenship for our community should not be included in the upcoming budget reconciliation bill. We know that she got it wrong. We will not take no for an answer. This is why we are out here today to fight for citizenship for all, for 11 million folks who have been left out.
The rally was styled after the Day Without Immigrants campaign that brought tens of thousands of Coloradans into the streets on May 1st, 2006.
We were asking for the same thing we are asking for today, 15 years later. We have been fighting for a pathway to citizenship longer than 15 years. It's time for we, the people, to include all of us.
I spoke with Eric Garcia with the Colorado Immigrants' Rights Coalition, which organized the event.
More than anything, we're here to demand immigration be included in the reconciliation process. What we're seeing is that we're in a time where Democrats control the House, they control the Senate, and they control the White House, and still they're struggling to hold the line and make anything happen for us and deliver on the promises. And so today we're here to say the time is now. In a time now where you control everything, you have every tool at your disposal, we don't take no for an answer. We know the United States has a long, long history of intervention in these countries. We know they've supported coups in this country. In fact, we have a member, Lucha para Honduras Libres, who's a member of CERC, who directly cites the 2010 coup, a U.S.-backed coup, as a reason for their forced migration. We no longer are ignoring that the U.S. is deeply ingrained in root causes of migration. And when folks get to the border, the rhetoric and the policies go to attack the symptoms as opposed to the reason, like, get out of those countries, stop destabilizing them, right? Like, it's that simple. I think I just want to emphasize the point that says we got a parliamentarian decision, and it's a recommendation, and we're asking Democrats to take it as just that. We're asking Democrats, in a time where you control every tool, to overrule. We're asking Democrats to overrule the parliamentarian and give us a pathway to citizenship in this reconciliation process.
After several speeches at Viking Park, demonstrators marched down Spear Boulevard.
Right now we are on the road, and there's a lot of people here for the same vision and purpose of making sure that everyone has human rights in this country.
I'm a DACA recipient. My parents came here to the U.S. 20 years ago. We've been waiting for a path to citizenship ever since. My parents had worked through the pandemic the whole time. They're essential workers, and they should be protected.
The marchers finally reached their destination at Tivoli Quad on the Auraria campus.
Bienvenidos, mi gente. Bienvenidos a todos. Welcome.
There, a large stage was set up, backed by a banner emblazoned with the words, Citizenship Now. The rest of the afternoon's program included music, dance, and spoken word. The Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition said that they were glad to be able to bring local attention to a federal issue and that the time for action is now. They say that they'll continue to organize efforts until a pathway to citizenship is available for everyone. For KGNU, this is Jonathan Flowers.
The next round of United Nations climate talks, known as the Conference of Parties, is due to take place in early November, and climate justice activists are already mobilizing to call for world leaders to take meaningful steps to address the climate crisis. Here in Boulder, religious communities under the Green Faith banner will gather this afternoon near the Central Library and then march to banks currently financing new fossil fuel projects, like Enbridge's Line 3. Over the weekend, Green Faith activists from various denominations gathered at the Mountain View Methodist Church to paint signs and banners ahead of today's action. Among them was Sherry Price.
I am with the Boulder Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Lafayette. I live here in Boulder, and the congregation is a member of Green Faith, which are the organizers. It's a consortium of faith communities here locally who work on social issues. So climate change is a very important social issue, and that's why we're here.
And what is it exactly that you're here doing today for people who aren't seeing this but rather hearing it?
We are making posters and banners for a march tomorrow evening. Anyone who cares about the environment, especially locally, this is where it all starts. Come down and join us.
Of environmental issues here in Boulder, what is something that you feel most passionately about and feel that can be done and accomplished at a local level?
I think we need to take the guidance from our kids in public and private schools, because they are learning and they need to teach us older folks how to do things for the future. Like, don't use plastic, collect plastic and recycle it. Only eat the factory farmed meals once a week and focus instead on plant-based diet to help the climate and to save all the animals.
And you say to help the older people understand. Do you mind telling us how old you are and what your path to environmental activism was?
Well, I'm 75 years old. And my love of nature and all the creatures on the planet go back very, very far to when I was a kid. And a big element of the environment is not just man, not just cats, dogs, goldfish, and canaries, but all the wild creatures, the butterflies, the hummingbirds, the bears, the deer, the mountain lions, they all deserve to be happy. They all have emotions just like humans do, and they need to be treated with respect.
This effort here is part of Green Faith. You've already touched on the importance of the green aspect of it, but talk a bit more about the faith. How many congregations are here working together, and what is the role of faith communities in land stewardship?
I would say there are probably at least a half a dozen Boulder faith communities here this afternoon. I think people of faith have recognized that saving the planet to a large extent is faith-based. We have to have faith in the future. We cannot predict it perfectly, but we have to have faith that our works today will save the planet for future generations. And if you look at history, much of the abolitionists were organized by faith-based communities. Faith-based communities have always been in the forefront in the U.S. with progressive movements.
That was Sherry Price, congregational member of Boulder Valley Unitarian Universalist Church in Lafayette. The Green Faith Gathering will take place today at 4 to 6 p.m., starting in the park next to the Boulder Central Library. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The number of Denverites struggling with food insecurity tripled during the pandemic. According to the Denver Department of Public Health and Environment, one in three people now struggle to put good, nutritious meals on the table. One Denverite, who was once unhoused himself, has a new project to connect the community with free, healthy food options, without the side of stigma. CityCast Denver host Bree Davies and producer Zandra McMahon met up with Jim Sharper to check out his project, Feeding Denver's Hungry.
So we are in this massive warehouse. It's much bigger than I had anticipated.
Yeah, it's a little overwhelming coming in here.
Yeah. It's amazing.
That was Jim Sharper, founder of Feeding Denver's Hungry. He started the nonprofit 8 years ago with a few friends, passing out sandwiches near Little Devil's Lounge on Broadway. But now, producer Alexandra McMahon and I had to drive pretty far from their original spot in Baker to get to a new massive warehouse in Montbello. And walking inside, it's obvious that this is not your typical food bank. There are no prepared boxes of pre-selected goods. Instead, it looks and operates like a grocery store where people can come in and choose for themselves what they want to eat. There are aisles and aisles of food, home essentials, and personal care items neatly organized on shelves. But unlike a regular store, this free grocery store has no cash registers. Zero. I guess let's just start walking through and describe what people experience if you're coming to shop.
Yeah, so if you walk in the door here, you're going to first come over and check in with me here at the desk.
Okay.
They're going to show me the QR code. Anybody that needs groceries would have to go online to feedingdenvershungry.org. And then you're able to sign up for the next month for a day to come out here and go shopping. And you don't just come out here and get a small little bit of groceries. You're taking home groceries for a month of canned and dry goods. And then we do also have some fresh veggies, fruits, meats. Lots of fresh fruits and vegetables today. A lot of them are in the refrigerators, but we do have some sitting out here on the tables.
So people can get fresh produce as well.
Right. So they can get as much fresh produce as they can use for their family.
Where does the food come from?
90% of it comes from the Food Bank of the Rockies.
Okay.
We're able to purchase things from them for pennies on the dollar. Then we have some laundry products as well. Try to keep a variety of things.
So what I'm noticing about the way that you have this set up that's a little different than, say, what we would call a traditional quote-unquote food bank is the ability for folks to choose their food.
Right. It offers some dignity back into the situation. It's like going to the grocery store.
Yeah.
You pick and choose what you want. The only difference is on the way out the door, I don't see a cash register.
Yeah. Why is that important to you?
12 years ago, as of August 29th, I got sober. I was homeless a few years ago, and I know what it's like to be down and out and to feel looked down upon.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of these food banks, when people go to these food banks, they feel less than.
Yeah.
And I want this situation to be more of a positive situation. You know, we welcome them, say hi as they come in and get them checked in, and we try to keep it an uplifting experience.
Yeah.
And when I finally got sober, I decided I wanted to do something to give back. And I started making meat and cheese sandwiches because everybody was handing out peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and I knew that that's not what people wanted.
Sure.
So that's what I did, is I made some meat and cheese sandwiches, and some friends of mine heard what I was doing, wanted to help, and then friends of their friends and friends of their friends. And it's just grown, and now we've got probably over 250 volunteers.
Can you explain Feeding Denver's business model and sort of how the day-to-day business part of it functions?
So 99% of what happens here is because of my friends and their friends donating cash, because that's how we continue to buy the product to make this happen.
So you operate on a donations right. to keep the operations running itself.
Yeah, there's no government backing here. This is all just donations of people that I know and their friends. And it comes on a continuing basis because they know what it's like, because I've explained to them what we're doing. We have had a couple businesses that have made some larger donations, but they are few and far between.
Yeah, it's more individual. Yeah,
it's more individuals at $20 at a time, you know, and it makes a big impact.
And then you have, like you said, you just have volunteers that help out every day.
Yep, they just show up they actually sign up online as well to volunteer.
So so anybody can volunteer if someone wanted to,
yes,
to help
absolutely.
Out.
And then our volunteers, you know, a lot of them are in dire situation themselves.
Yeah.
So the last thing that they get to do before they go home is go shopping themselves.
That's awesome.
We had a space at Little Devils at 255 South Broadway. That's where we started making hundreds of sandwiches.
Oh, sure. Off Broadway in Alameda about. Mm-hmm.
We outgrew that. A guy of Acme Storage gave me the keys to the building next door that was empty. And we were there for several years. And then of April of this year, they sold that property, so we had to find something else. And then Prologis saw the interview that I did on the news channel, and they called me the very next day and without hesitation just said, "We have a place for you. I have two for you to choose from. When can you meet me?" So I went and met him that next day.
Wow.
And this was the second place we looked at, and I told him this one seems like the best layout for us, and he handed me the key that day. And we're very thankful because we can serve thousands of families out of this place.
So you've been all over the city. Have you seen, do you see more people now that you're out here?
We had a little bit of a lull because people were used to us being downtown.
Sure.
So it was a little difficult for people to find transportation out here. But now that people know what they're receiving and they know it's worthwhile, they're finding transportation. Our bookings are booked out a month in advance very quickly. So we're not having a problem with that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I could see the transportation being an issue, but like you're saying, they've got time to set it up.
Right.
You do this, you know, you sign up for a specific time. It's all very organized.
Right.
What do you wish people who've never experienced food insecurity would know about that experience that you had?
Just that most people would not choose to be in that situation. I think a lot of people think that they look at, like, our homeless situation here in Denver, and they look at it like people choose that situation. I don't believe that's the case at all.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of mental illness. I think there's a lot of untreated things.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people that are one paycheck away from being on the streets, and that one paycheck disappeared during COVID.
Yeah.
And a lot of people ended up sleeping in their cars.
Yeah.
And now we have all these families that are living together as, you know, big groups because they can't afford housing on their own.
Right.
And none of them can afford food. So I guess I would like for people to recognize the fact that a lot of people are in this situation not of their own making.
Yeah.
And they just weren't fortunate enough to have a high-paying job like some of the other people. And they live paycheck to paycheck. So when we can put together, you know, a $5 donation, and I can turn around and make that $5 turn into $100 worth of product,
yeah,
it makes a huge difference, a big impact on our community.
Well, this is incredible, Jim. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you guys coming out here. It's great to show
awesome.
It off.
Awesome. It is awesome. It's a really great thing. And the way that you're running it, I think, like you're saying, with giving people the dignity and autonomy of choice is huge. It's huge.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That does it for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to volunteer headlines producer Jamie Sudler, reporter Jonathan Flowers, and to Dr. Decibel for technical assistance.